welcome to Bagel Tech F1. This is the only show we do on the network where I don't care if anyone listens. It's okay.
At the moment,
yeah, who cares? Because I'm here to talk F1 with all the people on the network that fancy talking F1. We've got a blank screen up here, look. We need someone to fill it, so if you want to fill it, then you can. I don't care. This is all about the passion of F1, because I've got to say, until the start of this year, I thought DRS was a furniture store. It's... And Kurz, didn't he used to sing for Simple Minds? The F1 season, I've got the one thing we were talking about before we started was that the F1 season is last year and this year has been really, really good, and I've got back into it because I haven't really watched it since the mid-90s. I've not been interested. The ITV years, as Russ in the chat room says. So joining me to discuss in a lay fashion, it has to be said, F1, with they've got more knowledge than I have, that's for sure. I've got a great panel. Starting us off, we've got Tony Blunt, top right. Hello, mate.
Right.
Coming all the way from my old hometown, Nottinghamshire. We were reminiscing about Ucknell earlier.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. I won't go any further north than that because the women get a bit ropey then. So, following F1 for a long time, Tone?
Well, since early 90s, late 80s, really.
Kind of when I stopped watching.
I guess. I stayed with it through the Schumacher years, you know.
The thing that really makes me ashamed is the fact that I watched it when Mika Rosberg's dad was racing.
Keke Rosberg.
And you did as well then, Sarah, so they show your age. No, Keke Rosberg, and he drove for the Williams team. Tag Heuer used to be their main sponsor. And the only reason I ever wanted a Tag Heuer when I was a kid was because of F1. There you go. It's the power of marketing and sales. Yeah. And as soon as I could afford it, I got myself a Tag Heuer because of it. So, Tony, what do you think to the year this so far?
It's been one of the best in a while so far this year, since I've been watching it, really.
I've got to say, I think that there's an awful lot of good come out of this season's F1. Very, very good. Very, very good. Below him, we've got one of the stalwarts of the network, our sysadmin Sarah.
Hey, Ewan.
And for once, it's not her typing.
No, it's not.
Sorry.
See, my hands.
It's all right, mate. If it's not your fans, it's your bloody fingers. Sarah, F1 fan, lo and
yes,
behold.
Yes, I am. I have a long history with Formula One. It's really how my parents met. And when I was a child, I went to Grand Prix and motor racing of all different sorts. And I've got pictures from years gone by with Graham Hill and from the 60s and stuff like that. So, yes, I kind of grew up with it, and my brother continued it because he raced karts with Lewis Hamilton.
Your brother raced karts with Lewis Hamilton?
Indeed he did.
God blimey. Is your brother a whippersnapper then? I don't wish to be indelicate here, but your brother would not be the same age as Lewis Hamilton, I would guess.
No, my brother's a bit older than Lewis Hamilton.
Okay, right. I don't know how to say that. So, this season, what do you think?
I've been a bit, feel like it's a bit Schumacher-esque of the Ferrari and Schumacher with the Red Bulls, but the last three races or so, I think, have been really good, exciting to watch. Been afraid that it was going to turn into another procession.
No, this year, but we don't want that.
It seems to be changing, and I'm quite happy about that.
Good. And to the left of her, we've got Mr. Steve Neighbour, Mac Man and Closet F1 Man. You're outed, boy. You're outed.
Oh, I always enjoyed watching F1. I love the fact that it takes over the Sunday. I love the fact that it's exciting. It's been an amazing season this year. Really enjoyed it.
I've got to say, the one thing that struck me from watching Twitter is the fact that the Americans sit down to the Sunday afternoon football game, don't they? And F1 is our Sunday afternoon football game in the UK.
Absolutely. You know,
Twitter's alive with it, and it really is the way forward. So, the week in F1, I mean, news such as it is, the one thing that I thought we could start with, they're talking about going all electric in the pits in 2014, aren't they? So, everything's going to be run off electric. There won't be any air tools or anything like that. But there's also some suggestions that there's going to be an electric F1 car. I mean, what's the view on electric F1? Because the one thing I've thought about is this is going to be massively unfair.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that the FIA are very much trying to use Formula One to drive the development of road cars. And I think this is them actually saying, I mean, this is why we've had a lot of changes with, you know, them going from 12 cylinders to 10 cylinders and to 8 cylinders. And, you know, we've seen all sorts of changes in that, certainly in the last 5 to 10 years. And this is just another way that they're actually using, you know, things like, well, things like KERS and DRS are a classic example of that.
Classic, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the thing that's the key part of that, the difference, is going to be the acceleration, surely.
Yeah, but this is a way of for that to develop. I mean, you know, I don't know if anyone's actually driven the electric car. I certainly haven't, but I think most people sort of say that they worry about that sort of aspect. That was one of the aspects they worry about. So hopefully with F1 doing it, if they do, then maybe that will drive the development of that.
Anyone else?
I think they've had good fun with KERS. They brought it in, didn't like it, took it out. Some teams went with it, some teams didn't. But it's about sponsorship. It's about getting the manufacturers kind of involved in it. And that's where they're trying to take the industry as well, in terms of learning new technologies and pushing the boundaries. And the more investment they can get, even if they're just seen to be in green, I think it helps their PR, etc. It's a good thing.
Tone, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think the KERS, it didn't really work so well on its own, but when they combined it with the DRS, the new system, you know, I think that's what's really improved the whole concept of the racing altogether. Well, I mean, and they call it all road relevant as well, don't they, when they bring in these things?
The key part of this is the fact that KERS and DRS has been brought in to promote overtaking. But if you're talking about an electric-powered F1 car, you're talking about, I mean, the obvious example or parallel is to think of the Tesla, yes? Tesla Roadster. Acceleration to 60 miles per hour in the Tesla Roadster, because it's electric, is 3.6 seconds. Now, that's as fast as the Nissan GTR that was on Top Gear this week.
Yeah.
I mean, that is phenomenal acceleration in a road car.
That is.
Now, you take that acceleration and multiply it up to F1 standards, you're talking about noughts to 60s in like motorbike speeds. So the KERS and DRS element is there to promote overtaking, but you're talking about having KERS available from the minute you start and at every single corner and at every single straight. You know, but then the only question is going to be the battery pack, isn't it? I
mean, yeah, this is what I'm saying, so about heavy. Using it as a way of developing that. The battery pack is the biggest problem, the recharging and the life that a battery will last in a electric road car. And with the amount of acceleration they're doing in the Formula One car, I think it may be a good way of actually developing that technology further, because we know how good the teams are at doing this sort of thing. You know, I mean, look at what AGNU has done for aerodynamics.
Isn't that the point, though, that the comparison doesn't exist with road cars, because electrical cars for acceleration are effectively crap. I mean, you put your foot down on a Nissan, on the Prius rather. As soon as you put your foot down on the Prius, the engine kicks in. It doesn't run on the batteries anymore.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. I think that will actually boost it could boost the development of that.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, the last thing you want is like, you know, pit stops where they're changing batteries.
Well, it's not going to happen. I mean, the fuel changing thing's gone, isn't it? I mean, that's one of the points that Steve wanted to make later on. The other thing to talk about, I suppose, was the team orders thing at the end of last week, or the week before last at Silverstone. Hmm. You've got Webber and Vettel venomously spitting it out going through the last lap. And then the team orders come in from Christian saying, "Oi, you know, maintain the gap, mate." Right thing, wrong thing, is it team orders under a different guise, or was it absolutely essential?
It was essential. I mean, the primary focus that Christian Horner had there was to make sure they don't collide, otherwise they lose the team lose a bucket load of points,
which they've already done in Turkey.
You know, they had plenty of opportunity. Yeah, exactly, last year they had plenty of opportunity to race. There was no reason why it was only in the last couple of laps he actually said it. And I totally think it was the right thing. We know that team orders are now allowed because the FIA can't police that after what happened last year with Ferrari. you know, it was totally the right thing to do.
Good to see that this week Christian was saying, I know that my guys are free to race, but when it comes down to it, I bet it's in their contracts that when they're told those orders in terms of maintain the gap, that's what they have to do. Just to keep both of their, well, Vettel's chances of winning the championship live.
I can't remember which team it was, but I remember that there was, it might have been McLaren, I can't remember, but they used to say, I think it was McLaren, they always used to say that they can race up until the last pit stop and then they hold position.
Yeah, and I think that's quite a sensible Coulthard.
Right.
A few times.
Was that Coulthard and Hakkinen days, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's quite a sensible policy.
I'm not sure if that's as true now with the no fueling and tyres, because pit stops aren't exactly the same as what they used to be, are they?
Well, there was a thing this week because Massa and Vettel had to both pit on the very last lap to get tyres back on. Now, what was that all about? Because some had adopted two stop strategy and three stop strategies, but why did I didn't understand that? Why those two had to come in? The reason was because
they had this. I'm not sure whether it was the option or the prime tyre, which they found because of the cold conditions was a second or a second and a half slower. This is why they're all bailing into the pits towards the end to actually change onto this tyre, because they hadn't been, they'd only used the one compound up till that point.
So they had to use the hard compound at some point during the race.
On the different compound because they hadn't used that compound up till that point. So even if they did like the last lap, and there was that thing between Vettel and Massa where on the previous lap where they bluffed the teams had bluffed each other and they'd left it till the absolute last possible opportunity, which was to come in at the start of the last lap. I mean, I was really annoyed actually, because on the coverage that when Stefano was being interviewed, that Jake didn't ask him what happened there. Because, you know, something obviously happened there, and you know, the reason why that they took so much longer, and we never did find out what that was.
Yeah.
You mean the Ferrari team?
Yeah.
Yeah. The pressure was on them. They knew that was coming for the last 10 laps or so, that it was going to be in the last or the second to last lap. They were both going to come in at the same time. So it would be amazing to know why they, you know, under that pressure, they did buckle. Yeah.
We didn't see any camera footage or anything when they were both in the pits of the Ferrari team. So we don't know whether there was somebody that missed a wheel nut or something, but something happened there because Massa was first to his pit.
It was Christian Horner running down the pit lane, putting them off or something. It was, it was something, something went wrong.
Could very well have been.
Right then, the race. The race.
Yeah.
German Grand Prix, you've got Five, six, seven Germans willing to start.
Six.
Somewhere between five and seven.
Six.
Too many. There we go. Too many Germans looking to start the race, looking to win the home GP. Vettel comes out like he's got the flu. I mean, he was really down, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Just didn't appear to have anything at all.
Apparently, it was since Friday practice.
Heidfeld thought it was a game of bumper cars for most of the way over through it. And then finally, old Lewis emerges. Sorry, just a bit of jingoism.
Well, again, also at the start, we don't know what happened with Vettel's car off the start line. When they showed the replay of that, it sounded like there was something not quite right with that car, whether it was the revs or what.
No, that was Webber.
Sorry, I meant Webber. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I meant to say.
Well, he's supposed to hold the revs and then declutch it and let it go.
Yeah.
And he held the revs and he dropped the revs before he started. So, which is the reason that Hamilton got straight ahead. And old Martin got a bit confused, didn't he? And said that it was actually Webber that had got in the sandwich, and it wasn't. It was Vettel behind him that had got in the sandwich with Alonso and Massa.
Yeah.
So, I mean, was the start the predilection of the entire race, or was there more to it than that?
I thought it was an amazing start by Hamilton. Really good to see him come off straight off the line. But the interesting thing was his lap time over the first, was it 14 or 16 laps or so where he was in front, was definitely matching the Red Bull, and pulled away to a point. I think he was about 2.7 seconds away and kept up that gap, which was good. As somebody who's trying to watch and make sure, have an interest in race rather than Red Bull dominating, it was good to see him pull away and maintain a good gap.
Now, I find that interesting, because if you look at the if you look at the first few statistics for Webber, Webber was making up time. Webber was turning in faster laps than Hamilton.
But he kept the gap.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the gap was slowly closing, but not enough.
Yes, yeah, and that was a good thing. So I think Hamilton, once he's at the front, they do go to a management situation in terms of don't push the tyres too much, don't use too much fuel.
Well, he's known for abuse as well, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he abuses the car very, very badly. He doesn't hold on to a set of tyres the same way as Button does.
Yeah, well, yeah. Button, that's actually slightly. Not completely right, because Button is actually superbly good at it. If you look at him across all the teams, he actually outshines everybody in all the other teams as well. It's just that Lewis actually does push all the time.
Who was the guy? There was someone that nursed a set of tyres through tonight and was or at the end, and it was ridiculously long or something. He'd had it for the same set of tyres for 30 odd laps.
Oh, it's Petrov, wasn't it?
Petrov, yeah, that's right, yeah.
So.
He nursed it right in. Tony, what's your view on the race then, the first 15 laps, say?
First 15 laps, yeah, Hamilton did get a fantastic start. I'll absolutely give him that. Webber, he was trying to catch. I don't know what was going on with Vettel, because he just seemed off his normal pace. But you did have the Ferraris chasing as well, you know. So,
I mean, it seemed to me that the first 15 laps was kind of like the microcosm of the entire race. Because at the end of that 15 laps, you got Hamilton in front, you got the Hamilton Alonso pit variants, because they both came in at the same time, didn't they? But Hamilton got out ahead. At lap 13, you'd had the double switch with Webber. So Hamilton comes out ahead of Webber, but Webber takes him, and then Hamilton takes him back on the outside.
Yeah, it was like Webber was asleep at that point. It was amazing overtake when Hamilton took him on the outside. It was
just straight out of the pits on lap 13. I think by lap 15, you know, you kind of had the die cast to a certain degree in what the final result was.
Yeah. I mean, the weird thing about that,
the situation with Hamilton
and Webber, it was the same later on with Alonso and Hamilton.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had that sort of switch around like that, and then the other driver that wasn't Hamilton just seemed to be in the daze almost.
Sarah, you were saying?
I was just going to say, I think that the die wasn't completely cast. I mean, Hamilton's actually said that he felt that the three of them were all within a tenth each other, lap after lap, for the whole race. So, and even right up to when they were coming in for changing for the third stop, we still didn't know which of them was actually going to win because they were that close.
Well, I don't know. What was the rest of you? Steve, what do you think on that one?
I think the interesting bit in the race for me was two-thirds of the race through. When we've seen all season, there's this thing called the undercut, where the first person that comes in puts on the fresh pairs of tyres, goes out and does one lap, and then the second person comes in, and just because the first person has done a hot lap on these new tyres, the first person who pitted ends up skipping a position. And I'm glad on this race that strategy didn't work the same, because Hamilton actually decided to come in first, put on the harder tyres, and I believe because the track temperature was a little bit lower, the harder tyres actually worked better, and the undercut didn't work. I made it good for the rest of the season in terms of this strategy is not going to work every single race. Good on to the team for bringing him in at that point, because it was the right time to bring him in.
Okay, so was the... How big an issue is the... I mean, one of the reasons I switched off from F1 during the 90s was the fact that it all became about the pit strategy. You know, the two stops, the three stops, when you fueled, when you didn't fuel. Fueling's gone now. Pit stops are a significant part still of it, but, you know, we are getting overtaking back, which is the key part of the viewer audience. So how much is the pit strategy now playing a part? And should it play a bigger part or a lesser part?
I I think the pit strategy is less so important because of the DRS, because of the curves. That has increased the opportunity for overtaking. That has increased the actual racing and the excitement as one car gets closer to another. You know that that car is pulled into the wall, not only because of the slipstream, because of the DRS. I think pit stops are less exciting than they used to be because there was more potentially to go wrong. The fuel stops, the there was more to do on the fuel stops. But
the spraying people with fuel and then igniting it a bit.
The big fireballs that used to happen.
Yeah. There is still enough like, goes wrong in pit stops, so even with when it's just tyres, you know, we've seen that.
Losing the wheels, yeah.
Yeah.
Am I the only person that sometimes watches F1 just wants to watch the crashes, or shall I not say that? But it's good excitement in terms of some of the things that can go wrong. But I think the pit stops are a lot better managed than they used to be.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I was going to say, of course, we saw that tyre, the wheel problem with Button at Silverstone, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, the pit stops are down to 4.6 seconds now. So it's a huge amount of the total time of the pit stop is now gone, because the fueling was pushed it up to sort of the 12 second mark, didn't it? 8 to 12 seconds, and you had a splash and dash and those kind of things, and that was it.
Mm.
I mean, I think it's a positive to see that it's gone now. Definitely.
I don't know. What you mean, the refueling?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a positive to see refueling. I'm just trying to find a picture of refueling. There we go.
I thought the refueling was brilliant, because then you had completely two different strategies on the grid. Now, you strategies are basically two stop and three stop, and what tyres, and you can see what tyres people are on. Button normally goes for the two stops where people are going for free in the main, because he's confident on his tyres and keeping them going. I think with the fuel stops, you had a bit more kind of variety in the different strategies that were being employed.
But that's what I find kind of the interesting things is the fact that you've got drivers that clearly caress the car around. They don't use the tyre levels the same as everybody else. They don't abuse the vehicle. They come in at the end and they've got fuel to spare. But they're not making the points, though, either, are they?
Yeah, you got. It's about driving it to the limit in terms of fuel usage. And everything else. I mean, you're not really going to get, unless you get unexpected safety cars, you're not going to get a lot of fuel saving.
I'm disappointed in the amount of safety cars this year. We used to have a good safety car come out and mess the whole thing up every so often in the past few years, but
I went
in the bin this year. Oh, there was the Canadian race, which was legendary. But there haven't been that many.
I've got to say, I thought that race was really well managed by the FIA.
I thought that was a good job.
Hats off, because it was really, really well done. You could have just parked that one and said, look, all right, fellas, you know what, just hang out your helmets today, because it's just not racing weather. But they kept it going. They hung on and hung on and hung on. They reacted to the Doppler to make sure that they had the weather there. They kept the car out when it was necessary. They brought the car in when it wasn't. And it was that slight bit at the end with Button and Vettel, you know, was just superb. You know, he was ragging him constantly. And it was just that one corner was the entire Grand Prix almost, but it seemed to work pretty well.
There were two favourite points of that coverage for me. One, the BBC's coverage, and you have it on just occasions like that. They covered the guy brushing the water away from the track for about half an hour,
and it just flowed back.
Didn't people watch a guy brush water or something as well?
Yeah, with Martin and DC going on about, you know, what on earth are they going to talk about for all this time and stuff like that. It was great.
So what's the situation now? I mean, Sarah, you were saying earlier on that you were worried about the fact that it was becoming a bit of a procession after the Vettel era. Now, Vettel's dropped down. He only got fourth this week. There was a huge battle between him and Massa. Alonso and Ferrari have definitely got the two Grand Prix out of the way that were probably they weren't going to get points from, and they've come away with points. Is it wide open again?
No.
I think
Vettel will walk away with it.
This is
going to be the biggest points win ever for a championship.
Vettel's panicking.
No, it's not. This is not 2009 with Jenson Button, you know.
Vettel, I was still just about to say, I was having the flashbacks to 09, you know, with the button just running away with it at first, and then suddenly it fell off.
I think if you get ideal situations, which is warm temperatures, dry track, the Red Bulls are going to just walk away with it. And that's where most of the tracks will be.
Well, the big part was the fact that Ferrari had an experimental setup at Silverstone, didn't they? So,
yeah, because of the late FIA rules.
And they thought it was working, but they had a very cold Grand Prix at Silverstone and a very cold Grand Prix this week, and they had the suspecting of rain this week and didn't actually get it. So, you know, if Hungary turns out to be decent weather, nice hot track, there's no reason it can't be. It's a little bit further south, looks an awful lot nicer. The track probably will suit overtaking, which is going to suit Alonso. I mean, are we seeing them as a real serious competitor for next week?
It depends on what the conditions are next Sunday. So I know Martin Brundle tweeted last night that he'd arrived in Budapest and it was chucking it down with rain.
Hooray! That's just washing the track there, making it green, surely. I mean, he wrote a piece this week on the BBC website saying that the tide is turning against Red Bull.
Yes. I'm not completely convinced.
Brian
is in the comments in the chat room saying there's Hungary is a particular difficult circuit for overtaking.
They always say Franchancourt is probably one of the best, don't they? The Belgian Grand Prix is the best for overtaking.
Yeah, Spa-Francorchamps, yeah. And it's also the driver's favourite as well.
Yeah, and particularly, you know, I've never seen Nuremberg as being a huge overtaking track, and certainly Silverstone never has been. And yet, there's been overtaking there this year.
It's different though with the DRS, though. I think it's basically the slipstream times two, isn't it, DRS? You just get quicker and quicker the closer you get to the car in front, which is a good thing. It's a good thing for the TV and it's a good thing for the viewers.
Agree.
So, have we got to finish off then? I thought we could do this because it'd be good to see what you spontaneously give as an answer here. Is there a magic moment from the F1 this week? We should pick our magic moment from this week.
Oh, that's a tricky one.
Yeah, I'll leave you to think about
Hamilton,
it.
Hamilton's overtake, outside overtake of Alonso.
The one at three quarters in.
It was around the outside.
Yeah, on turn two, turn three. Yes. Something like
on
that.
Turn two.
That's say Vettel spinning off.
Vettel spinning off. That was a bit of a classic, wasn't it? Just touching the AstroTurf.
Yeah.
And that away he goes. Tony, have you got a moment?
Well, I was going to say again, you know, Hamilton passing Alonso after that second.
You got to think again. Have a thing? I'm going to tell you mine. Mine was the moment that the text came on and told Massa that he had to just pass Rosberg. Like, it was just like, come on. Just get past him. Come on, stop messing around. Get past him. I loved that bit. It was just like you could just imagine Massa coming back on the radio. Piss off. I'm trying as hard as I can. If you can do any better, you come out here and take over. I'll stop. Yeah. You can change seats with me. You could do like Le Mans.
You do kind of wonder sometimes about the engineer's messages to the drivers, don't you?
You do. It's like, well, a lot of them are like, you know, take care of the car, push hard, don't smash into your teammate. But that one was just like, pass now.
Oh, that was Rob Smedley, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I've got another one. It was another 2 points when at the end of the race where the Ferrari, I think it was Alonso, was hitching a ride on the side of Webber's car.
That was Mansell-esque, wasn't it?
Well, that's pretty illegal.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was my favourite bit, actually. Not the actual him riding on the car. It was when they got back to the garage. And then the camera went to Hamilton, who then jumped out of the pen. And it was David Coulthard, who's not a, can I say, anal person at all. But it was, he's going to get ticked off for that. He's not allowed to jump out of there. There's certain regulations. And
well, isn't it interesting that the both Ferraris ran out of fuel.
Yeah, shows their strategy.
it's interesting that, because I thought the regulations were now that they had to have enough fuel to get back to the pits after the end of the race.
Well, they've got to do more than that. They've got to have enough fuel to get back to the pit, and there has to be a remaining sample in the tank that the F1 can draw. So
I was quite expecting a penalty for Alonso for parking it on the track, because he was told that if he drove to the end of the, back to the Parc Fermé, that he wouldn't have had any fuel left in the car. But he didn't get a penalty for it.
So, no, I understood he pulled over because he had no fuel.
Yeah, I know, but I thought the rule was you had to have enough fuel to get back to Parc Fermé.
I would have understood that as well, and he had to have a sample left over.
As well, yeah.
Yeah,
because was it Canada last year, I think, qualifying, where Hamilton had that problem?
We've just had another complaint from the chat room that they've got another advertisement. I'm awfully sorry.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because we've looked at others as well, and they all seem to have adverts as well. So it's lesser of several evils, I think.
Yeah, I've got one called Baumler or something like that as well, which we'll have a look into. But Sarah and I are looking at changing it, so awfully sorry.
Yeah, we also suffer it as well, so we know what it feels like for you guys in the chat room.
If you sign in through the Ustream Lounge, then you don't get it. So go to ustream.tv/lounge, and then you can scroll up and you'll find BagelTech News, and when you find BagelTech Live, and when you find BagelTech Live, you don't get any through the lounge feed, apparently. So you might get one to start, and that's it. Anything to add about this weekend, or is that kind of it? Have we done it? See, the guy, if you've got nothing to say, then say frigging no. Don't just go quiet. It doesn't work with a podcast. Jesus.
I was trying to think if there was anything else that we need to talk about.
Can I come clean?
Go on.
I sometimes, not that I have kids that keep me awake in the middle of the night, but I sometimes drift off to sleep in a Formula One. Which is part of the enjoyment of it. And I must admit, there was a middle of it in the middle where I did close my eyes.
I have to admit that I've watched... Now, if you've got a Mac, then the one thing that you've got to get is get iPlayer Automator, because it takes everything that's an iPlayer, it rips it, and it sticks it automatically, encodes it and seasons it in iTunes with some clip art. It looks perfect. And I did all of the F1 stuff this weekend on that. And I sat down on my Apple TV this week and I watched all of the qualifying sessions and I watched the main GP. And I fell asleep from lap 32 to lap 45. And I woke up.
You and me together on that one.
And I didn't feel like I'd missed anything.
There are some Grand Prix like that. Valencia was like that.
Right, predictions for next week. Then we'll finish off. Tony, start us off.
I'm thinking Alonso will be strong again. I think he might take another win.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
I don't know if it'll be from pole. I think it'll still be Vettel on pole. But
do you think, Tony, that that the Webber? I mean, he's had five consecutive poles now where he hasn't won. He's only come in the top three. I mean, is that going to hurt a bit?
Yeah, that's got to be hurting him. I mean, what was it last year at Silverstone when he won? You know, he said, "Oh, not bad for a number two driver." I think he's still in that mindset, really.
Yeah, definitely. Sarah, your prediction?
I think if it's warm, it will be Vettel. No question about it. I mean, I please don't get me wrong here. I really don't want that. What happened in the first part of the season to happen in the second part, because it will just make it really boring. I do think if the weather's nice, it will be Vettel.
And Steve?
I like this going left, so I can read the fact chat room and get some good tips. I don't think Vettel, because his mind doesn't seem there at the moment, and I think that's part of the race. I think Webber's up for it because he did not like getting the team instructions last week and really likes proving a point, and that's why I think Webber was well up for it this weekend. I think Hamilton at the same point is at a mindset where he's up for it. I know McLaren got some new widgets onto the car ahead of this race, so I expect to see a battle with Hamilton and Webber again at the front.
Hamilton and Webber, you reckon then?
Yeah, why not? Good for a race. And Alonso will be there as well, because he's not far behind. He's had a good season. He's been up there. So
I mean, the result that's good for the championship has got to be Hamilton, Webber, surely, and Alonso. Any of those top three in the top three would be perfect, because Vettel is 70 points clear.
He needs a few DNFs to open it up.
Vettel. Can you honestly see Vettel not finishing between
That's
now
what I'm
and
saying.
The end?
It's not going to happen. Maybe I mean, he has a bad day and he finishes fourth. I mean, come on.
I mean, he drove like he got driving flu this week, without a doubt, and he still got fourth, which is, you know, that's the classic sign, isn't it? You know, you talk about Manchester United. Yeah, we had a bad day today, but we still won 5-0. You know, so
it's good. It's good to see Force India again on the chat room. I'll get my tips on that. Force India, well done.
Blatant neighbour.
Oh, why not? Why not? No, it's good to see them doing well as well. And our good friend from the young guy from Scotland is good. It's good to see him doing well. So
Duresta.
Duresta, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he really sounds good. Like a Scot, doesn't he?
He's a cousin of the IndyCar champion as well.
I'd love to see his tartan, the Duresta tartan.
Yeah, not quite like Jackie Stewart, I shouldn't
say. It's bound to have spaghetti in it.
Yeah.
Not being jingoistic or anything. My prediction, I've got to go with you, Turner. It's Alonso. I think they're on a real march. And I think you could see if in Hungary a Ferrari 1-2.
Oh, that would be great.
Ferrari 1-2, you mark my words. Mm. But then again, everything I predict never comes true anyway, so what's the point? I haven't got one thing right this year. I talk out my arse all the time. Who cares? Right. We've got to finish off with a word to our sponsors, because they look after us, and this show is just a trial, just to see where it happens, see what I mean. We'll come again together next week and we'll see whether anyone listens or not. But UK2, Sarah, stop typing. It's all right, don't whisper either, just stop. UK2 keep us afloat. They are our bandwidth providers. They provide us with all the domain names, that kind of stuff. They've got a fantastic deal for you. If you're in need of a domain name, e-commerce, VPS servers, anything like that, then UK2 are the people that you need to get to. Go to uk2.net. Better still, go to our website and scroll down to the bottom, and when you get there, you'll find a link. Now, what happens when you click that link is that we get the credit for sending you, so you're supporting our network in the process. And here's the best bit. When you get to the end and you've bought everything that you want to buy, go into the coupon code that's on there and put in BagelTech, all one word, and you will get 15% off whatever you've got in your cart. That simple. Not just 10% like most places give you, 15% because you listen to BagelTech. UK2 are extremely happy with the number of people that have been clicking through and buying. They can track you and they know that you've been buying, so they say thank you very much, and we say thank you very much, because you know, we don't get any money from that, but you keep us afloat by keeping our sponsors and our bandwidth providers happy as well as. But one thing that they have fed back to us is that people are using the click through from the BagelTech website, getting to the end and not using the coupon code, not claiming the £15. And this is the interesting thing, is UK2 have told us that they want to give you the 15%. So for God's sake, please use the passcode and use BagelTech there, and you'll get your 15% off. The other thing you can do to support BagelTech is to have a look at our new sports range of t-shirts. There's a whole pile of them. If you go to bageltech.spreadshirt.co.uk, you can find our range of t-shirts available. All the logos are there. There's some statements on there that may be inappropriate at certain times, but if you'd like a t-shirt, then when you buy them, whatever you pay at the end, please be aware that there's a donation that goes to the BagelTech community. So what we'll do is we'll take that money and we'll apply it straight back into the tech to provide the show. So at the moment, we're saving up for a better video solution. All the money from the sale of the t-shirts that we get will go straight into video equipment to improve it, and then we'll be pushing out a video podcast as well in iTunes. And we've done rather well in iTunes as well. We hit top 30 this week in technology, which is always useful. So thanks to everyone that's been listening, thanks to everyone that's been clicking through on the sponsors, and thanks to everyone that's been buying shirts. We've sold a dozen of them so far in just 2 days, so
there's also a link on our main website.
Yeah, go to the website and you'll see the link through to the t-shirts there. Where can we get a hold of you to finish off with, Mr. Neighbour?
Clough at HQ.
And also London Matt User Group. If you're in London
Matt User Group.
Sign up, go there, throw some abuse at Steve when he's doing the news.
Absolutely. Anyone in London, come down and go onto our website. Just type LMUG, L-M-U-G in Google, and you find us. And come along and say hello. Buy us a beer.
And give him some abuse over the noise of his fans. Tony, where can we get a hold of you?
Okay, I'm on Twitter as at MightyHorse82.
MightyHorse82. And finally, Sarah, where can we get you, mate?
Best places on Twitter at SarahJaneUK.
Jolly good. I'll be back on Wednesday, but bearing in mind that I'm drinking all day tomorrow with Will Green at his studio over in Telford, it might not be your first thing in the morning on Wednesday, but I will push out a show, I promise. We'll be back again with the Bagel Tech Big Show for sure at 9:30 on Thursday night, and then we've got the Max Show at 1 o'clock on Friday, as well as the Photo Show at 3 o'clock on Friday. So we'll see you then. We'll see you next week after the Hungary Grand Prix, where there'll be a Ferrari 1-2. You heard it here first.
Hamilton Weber.
In your dreams.